Hello and welcome to the podcast of Vineyard Church here in Maryville, Tennessee. We post our Sunday messages here each week, as well as our conversations episodes, which include interviews, special announcements, and in-depth teaching. You can visit vineyardchurch.us to learn more about us or to access the audio archive. You can also subscribe to this podcast on Spotify, Apple, or Google Podcasts. And now, here's the episode.
All right. Well, good morning. Good to see you guys today. Welcome to the Vineyard. My name is Aaron. We're going to get into the sermon here in just a second. But first, I just want to highlight, we've been to the last couple of weeks, so we'll keep it in front of you for a bit longer. We are doing some hurricane relief. Just so you know, if you choose to give in any of those ways, the money's going to go exclusively to Convoy of Hope, which we've partnered with them for a bunch of years. But I tell you what, man, every time I have an interaction with them or I hear about their process, I'm just more and more impressed with how Convoy of Hope works. It's a massive disaster relief organization that's funded primarily through churches like ours. Just an incredible operation. And they were telling me this week that they think of every mobilization, especially on the other side of a hurricane. And by the way, they were there for Hurricane Milton before it was even done passing through the state. It was remarkable how quickly they responded to that. And of course, Hurricane Helene and the relief that going on there is a massive operation as well. But anyway, they do it in three phases. The first 3 days, they think of rescue. The second 3 months, they think of restore. I think that's the right R word. And then for 3 years, rebuild. So when they move into a place, they're not just showing up and handing some stuff out and bailing. They are there for 3 years to restore communities and to walk with them through the whole process. Just incredible. And just a logistic, it's incredible what they're able to pull off. So anyway, there are lots of really wonderful places that you can give, lots of wonderful organizations that you can respond to, and I encourage you to do any of that. But if you're thinking, I'd like to give, I'm not sure where, we just recommend working through them, and you can give through the normal means. Let us know that you want that money directed toward hurricane relief, and we will make sure 100% of it goes that way. All right, let me invite you to stand once again as you are able. We're going to read today's text, then we will say our prayer aloud together, Philippians chapter 3. Starting in verse 17, for I've told you often before, and I say it again with tears in my eyes, there are many whose conduct shows they're really enemies of the cross of Christ. They're headed for destruction. And here's a statement, their God is their appetite. Wow. So let's say our prayer aloud together. Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, you alone are King. Give us wisdom, courage, and kindness, that we might bear your image well. Unify us in heart, soul, and purpose, that the world might know your love. Make us your hands, generous and compassionate. Make us your feet, valiant and steady. In service to you and all you've created, give us love greater than fear. Onward for your kingdom, we're declaring your worth, finding our worth in you, and joining you in the renewal of all things. Amen. Don't have a seat yet. No. Look around, make eye contact with somebody. Give them a hug or a high five or a handshake or something. Say hello. All you friendly people, that's enough. You can be seated now. I like to do those meet and greet things while I'm up here all by myself, because ever since the pandemic, I don't know how to greet people anymore ever. I'm always, is it a fist bump? Is it a handshake? I go in, I just take a guess. I'm wrong 100% of the time. I make it awkward every time. I think I'm just going to bypass all of that and move to the holy kiss phase. Just start laying it on you people. I'm not going to do that. Don't worry. Man, cool. Hey, yeah, David said something. We were praying before this service began, in between the two services. And he said something in his prayer about how we pre-agree with whatever the Lord would want to do in this service. That was a thing. A number of us noticed it. I just want to encourage you to do that. I'm gonna start talking about some stuff here. The message has quite a few twists and turns. You might feel like you're catching strays here and there as I hit different topics, and the Lord might want to address something going on in your life or heart. And I just want to encourage you now to pre-agree with what the Lord is doing and how He might speak to you or challenge you along the way. And you may have noticed the trellis slides are up. We did trellis last week, and now we're doing trellis this week. If you haven't figured it out yet, we are talking about fasting again today. Twice. We're doing 2 weeks. That's the kind of church that we are, people. We're not playing around. We do 2 weeks on fasting. I know that's not probably super exciting, but I actually think this one really matters. Last week, we started on this topic, and I just want to encourage you, if you weren't here, I know it's fall break, so it's probably an entirely different group of people than were here for the last week's service. So if you weren't here, I just want to encourage you to get the podcast. I don't think we're going to break the internet downloading podcasts about fasting. And yet, I think it kind of matters. I think this one's sort of a big deal. So if you haven't, I would encourage you to get that podcast. By the way, if you feel like I tricked you because we talked about fasting last week, and we usually just spend 1 week on trellis, and maybe it feels like I didn't tell you because people aren't very excited about the subject, and you're suspicious about that, I just want you to know you are absolutely correct. That's exactly what I did. That is why I did it. I tricked you. but the thing is, last week when we talked about fasting, we kind of stayed up here, and I think we need to get down a bit today, kind of on the ground floor, and talk about a little bit more of the practical stuff. But first, I want to do just a quick review. For those of you who weren't here last week, clearly I don't trust that you'll get the podcast, so I'm just going to give you a quick review here. Just so we're all on the same foundation, a couple big ideas, and then we'll jump into today's thoughts. But number one, when we talk about fasting, there's no room for legalism at all. We can't do that nonsense. Fasting, and be very clear, is never commanded in the Bible. You are not required ever, ever, no, never, not ever. You can never fast once in your whole life and still grow spiritually, and Jesus will still love you and spend eternity with Him, and there'll be no asterisks placed next to your name in the Lamb's Book of Life. It's fine. Fasting, instead, rather than a command, is this sort of this, it's an invitation, it's this opportunity to grow in holiness, to grow in spiritual authority and freedom. And so it's like this tool in your tool belt, and it's always an invitation to use that tool, never an obligation. Okay? No room for legalism here. Secondly, fasting means going without food for a period of time. That's what it means. It gets confused with abstinence if you abstain from something. If you abstain from social media or chocolate or TV or whatever, that can be very good. It can be very powerful. Thumbs up for all of that, but that's called abstinence, not fasting. Fasting means not consuming calories for a period of time. Number three, fasting is not dieting. There's a long and there's an ever-growing, I think, list of health benefits that come from fasting, which is great. I talked about some of those last week. I'm not going to talk more about them now. I don't have any sort of, by the way, just as an aside, if you ever think that I'm trying to give you medical advice from up here, I've either misspoken or you have misheard. I have no credibility. I don't feel qualified often to talk about the things I'm actually supposed to talk about. I don't at all feel qualified to give medical advice. I'm not doing that at all. But, you know, there's sort of this growing list from people who do kind of know their stuff, who's saying, actually, it's really good for you, and there's health reasons. And so you may fast for health reasons, and if so, that's really great. Nothing bad about that. What's good for the soul is good for the body. That's great. But that's not the kind of fasting the Bible calls us to. The health benefits are nice, but totally secondary. Number four, fasting isn't about putting God in submission to us. It's about putting ourselves in submission to God. It's not trying to get Him to do what we want Him to do. It's trying to form our hearts so that we want what He wants. So we want to get that sort of direction sorted. And number five, fasting is not, hear me on this, it is not a form of punishing yourself in order to demonstrate how devoted you are. It's like, I fasted and I was miserable. The Lord's got to be impressed. It's not about that. so that, you know, it's not that God will have to, you know, give you what you're asking for. It's not about proving your piety or your holiness. It's definitely not a hunger strike or anything approaching that. All of that actually runs counter to the gospel. When the Apostle Paul said we are at war with our flesh, he's talking about our sinful nature, not our actual physical bodies. Just because we're practicing self-denial doesn't mean that we're practicing self-punishment, all right? It's not self-punishment, it's self-denial. And actually, that's kind of the big idea I want to zoom in on today, is this idea of self-denial and how just surprisingly, I think remarkably powerful it is. Paul warned about people who are controlled by their appetites. We read that before. Let me reread that text for you again. For I've told you often before, and I say it again with tears in my eyes, that there are many whose conduct shows they're really enemies of the cross of Christ. They're headed for destruction. Why? Their God is their appetite. This is not, by the way, talking specifically about food or an appetite for food. It's more general than that, for sure. He's painting a picture of someone who is directed, is controlled by their impulses. I think, I want that, and then they just move in that direction. Whether that desire, that impulse is for food or something else, food or maybe sex or money or pleasure or just fill in the blank. Here's the thing. We have lots of appetites. Lots of desires and impulses, and like, here's the thing, that's not bad. I know you might expect in church for the preacher to say, you have impulses, you have desires, that's inherently bad. It's not, it's actually good. They came from God, okay? And so if you're expecting me to say you need to turn those desires off and push them to the side, that's actually a different religion, that's Buddhism. That's the one who would say you want to sort of wash those desires away. That's actually not what the Bible teaches. The Bible says, actually, those desires ultimately came from God. They just have to be kept in their proper place. What's bad is when those appetites are always, always fed. What happens if you feed something and you just keep feeding it? It just grows and grows and grows. And then what can happen is those good desires, which again, from the Lord, good things, they can become like disordered and disproportionate. And then if you can picture this, they can start to spill the banks of what God has designed for them, and then they can become really destructive. Our desires are not bad, but they are powerful. And so if they're not controlled, then they hurt us, and they can hurt others. And so what this means is we have to learn to have desires without letting them take over. Okay? Y'all still with me? We're tracking? Just nod your head, just out of sheer kindness, if you're like, okay, Aaron, all right. So we can't let them take over. When food takes over, you guys know this, but when food takes over, it becomes gluttony. When sex takes over, it becomes lust, and then a whole bunch of things that can come down that path. When money takes over, it can become greed. When pleasure takes over, hedonism, on and on we could go. And again, those desires aren't bad, but if they're left unchecked, they can become really, really damaging. Okay, so you guys already, you know all that. If you've lived a minute, you know that if we just indiscriminately follow every desire, things mess up. We know that. But look, and here, honestly, lean in right now. Like, this is sort of the big idea for the day. Our capacity to control those disparate appetites and desires, our capacity to control them, rise and fall together. So here's what I mean. Stay with me. When we practice self-denial as it pertains to one appetite, it strengthens our self-control muscle in general, and it grows our capacity to control the other appetites as well. This is actually, don't run past it, it's actually a really big deal. As we learn to master one appetite, it gives us mastery over the others. They rise and fall. Our capacity for control over these things rise and fall together. This is why, by the way, if you read the saints, going back all throughout church history, like these people who just really walked with Jesus and they found these new levels and depths of holiness, and you read, you know, when they did write about how they experienced that and how they got there and talked about how they became more and more like Jesus, they always, I haven't found a single exception, they always talk about fasting. Always. And especially as it pertains to sexual temptation, which is interesting. If you're trying to, and if you need to just stare at your shoes right now, that's okay, because people get real squirmy when I talk about sex and sexual temptation, so it's all right. But if you're trying to break free from patterns of lust or sexual sin, if you're trying to break a porn addiction, if you're trying to wait for marriage, and you're kind of in that fight, listen, fasting might be your ultimate secret weapon in that fight. And the weird thing is that it is kind of secret. Like, I don't hear this taught about people. That might be completely surprising to you, but just stay with me. It can be your secret weapon. If you are trying to break an addiction to something else, maybe alcohol, or you're trying to disrupt patterns that you've noticed of gluttony or greed that are in your life, again, fasting might very well be your key to freedom and victory over that. I'll tell you a quick story. I've told this one, I think, a couple of times already. I keep coming back to it because it was a kind of a significant moment for me growing up. I was a little kid, 9, 10 years old is kind of where I guess, but that I almost always guess that I was 9 or 10. I don't know how old I was, but I think I was 9 or 10 years old. And I was with my family. We're hanging out with Mamaw. Mamaw Red, we called her, or Granny Grunt. She was this fiery, cool redhead. And when she talked, people listened just because, honestly, because she was hilarious and fun. And so anyway, she was talking about something, and the subject came up of some, unfortunately, this isn't shocking, some preacher who did something awful. And Mamaw jumps in, and she goes, "These preachers, when they fall, it's always pride, lust, or greed." And there's a weird thing about me. I know I said I was 9 or 10 years old, but at that point, this is strange, it's not normal, but like about the age of 5, I knew I wanted to be a preacher. I knew that's what I was going to do with my life. And so when she said, "These preachers, when they crash and burn, it's always pride, lust," I lit up and I thought, okay, I need to pay attention. What are the things that ruin the lives and the ministries of people? And she goes, "It's pride, it's lust and greed." And I really paid attention to that. It was interesting, almost reflexively, just I didn't think about it. It just sort of in my heart, in an instant, I thought, it'll be pride. Like, that's where I'm vulnerable. It'll be pride. Anyway, then I got a few years older, hit puberty, and I thought, actually, it could be lust. I could see that, actually, now that we're here. Before, I was like, I don't get it. Now I'm like, okay, I get it. That could be a problem. And so I thought, man, I've got to be intentional. I got to make sure that I keep those things at bay, that I keep those things in check, pride and lust, and then actually for quite a few years. And then somewhere in my mid-30s, I started to recognize, like, oh, I've like accumulated some stuff in this world. Like, there's a little bit of money in the bank, and I really love the home that we live in. It's beautiful. And then what came from that, rather than just gratitude, which is how it started, right behind that feeling of gratitude was this feeling of fear that I might lose it. And so there was this shift in me to where I felt like preserving. For me, greed didn't get its way into my heart by way of, I want more, I want more, I want more. It was like, oh, I'm blessed to have this, and now I'm afraid to lose it. And as I was wrestling with some of that fear, the Lord just spoke to me, clear as a bell, and said, you got to watch out for greed. And I thought of Mamaw and pride and lust and greed. I honestly, my response was like, man, all three? Like, I'm not exempt from any of them. I'm vulnerable to all of them. And it's like, yeah, you're vulnerable to all of them. And honestly, maybe we all are possibly vulnerable to all of them. But anyway, what I've discovered, especially in recent years, is that fasting is, without a doubt, it is my best bet to keep all three of those things in check. Now, I want to talk about each of the three because I do think they're such a big deal. The first one was pride, and it's interesting. I would encourage you to do this. If you do just a really simple study, a Bible study, a word study on fasting, you'll find that fasting and humility are almost always spoken of together. They're like inextricably linked. When you read about fasting, you hear about the proudful being humbled and humility coming to us. They're linked. Timothy Keller, the great pastor, he said this. This is fascinating. He said, humility is not thinking less of yourself. It's thinking of yourself less. Humility, or walking in victory over pride, is not going, oh, I'm the worst, thinking less of yourself. Like, ah, oh, you know, I'm scum of the earth, I'm so terrible, or whatever. He goes, that's missing the mark. In fact, that's profoundly self-focused as well. He goes, actually, it's just thinking of yourself less. It's like throughout the course of the day, you're able to see past your own nose a few times and start thinking about other people. And you don't walk into every room thinking about yourself and how you fit into that room and how you feel in that moment and what your needs are in that moment or how you're being perceived in that. And you start to look beyond and start thinking about those things for other people, what their fears might be, what their hopes might be. He says humility is not thinking less of yourself like you're worse. It's thinking of yourself less. So you just don't default to being self-focused all the time, which is our human nature. And you might think that fasting would actually make us more self-focused, like focused on yourself, just constantly thinking, I'm hungry. And that is sort of like self-focus. It's all about me if I'm just thinking hunger. And that can be the case initially. It probably will be. But after a while, I'm not even sure the mechanics of this, but it has this opposite effect. You start to realize this is a big part of fasting. You start to realize, you know what? You're not going to die. You go, I am hungry, and I cannot serve that appetite in this moment, and I'm going to be okay. And you start to realize that, and that sense of scarcity and urgency about you overcome that on one level, and your eyes begin to shift and focus, and you start to see beyond yourself. As you deny immediate desires, it has a way of broadening your perspective. And that impulse that we all have to make it all about you, to put yourself at the center of everything, to think about yourself in every context, you realize that's another appetite. And that appetite can be ignored too, just like hunger can be. And its demands can be muted. Surprisingly powerful. So that was the first one, pride. The second one on Mamaw's list was lust. I have shared before that for me, trying to not be controlled by lust feels like playing one of those infinite runner games. Do you guys know these games like Subway Surfer or Minion Rush or Temple Run? I think might have been the first one. If you haven't played them, they're usually on phones. Basically, at the beginning of the game, you start and there's something awful chasing you, and you run like crazy. And if you stumble once, then it's like breathing down your neck. And if you stumble twice, game over. You're done, okay? I was playing one of those games, and I thought, this is what it feels like to try to be free from lust in my life. I feel like I just wake up, and I just run. I just run scared and desperate, and if I stumble once, it's breathing down my neck, and if I stumble twice, I'm done. And here's the thing. I am willing to wake up every day and just run frantically to not be consumed by lust. I'm willing to do that. But man, that does not feel like freedom at all. That does not feel like walking in victory at all. And I've discovered that fasting, at least for me, is the key for breaking out of that. And maybe that'll be your experience, maybe not, but it's definitely mine. If you fast, you'll be very hungry for a little bit, for sure. But after a while, that dies down, okay? It's kind of like a screaming baby. Like eventually, they get exhausted, and you're like, not my kid, went for years, okay? But usually, or you learn how to soothe the screaming kid, and eventually it dies down. Your body accepts, okay, I don't have to keep screaming for food. I'm going to be okay. I'm not going to starve, and it stops screaming at you. It's like your hunger finally learns to take the loss. Like, take the L, man. You're going to be all right. And it does. Same thing happens when you're trying to tame sexual temptation. After a while, it gets put in its place, and it stops just screaming at you all day, every day. After a while, it takes the L, and you're set free from just running all the time. And again, I'll remind you, our capacity to overcome these things, they rise and fall together. And a lot of people, especially men, not just men, but especially men, have just given up on this whole thing and thought, you know what? The world is what it is, and I'm wired the way I'm wired, and I can't do this. I'm tired of running. I'm not going to spend every day frantically running. And essentially, in so many words, they say, I'll just give in, and hopefully it won't get too bad. I can't walk in victory, so I'll just try not to be so profoundly defeated. I'll just be addicted, and hopefully it won't get completely out of control, or I'll just allow certain indiscretions, and hopefully they won't really backfire on me. Or I'm going to accept the fact that I'm probably going to objectify women from time to time, but hopefully I don't get caught and look like a creeper because I'm staring, or whatever it might be. And that concession, which I understand, there's exhaustion, there's frustration. It's like, how do you ever win? But it's saying, I'm going to let that impulse be my God. It's saying their God is their appetite, which is what he warned us about. Peter said, 2 Peter 2:19, he said, you're a slave to whatever controls you. It's like, don't settle to be a slave to this. But at least in my experience, as I've had these conversations with people, very, very rarely have those folks who've just, I give up, man. I can't, I'll concede here and there. Very, very rarely have they ever even tried to tame that temptation through the practice of fasting. Remember, our capacity to control our appetites rise and fall together. As you control one, you are better to control the others as that self-control muscle builds. Okay, back to Mamaw's list. We got pride, we got lust. The third one is greed. I've been talking about lust, but greed is actually really similar. There's a lot of overlap. It's a lust for stuff, and particularly a lust for like status or a certain persona or image that is promised to us if you you shop for the right things, you have the right stuff, or you live in the right place, or you go to the right whatever, fashion or gadgets or whatever. And it's so sneaky, man. Like, I'm so grateful that we live here, where we are and when we are. If you ever pull the camera back and try to get some historical perspective, we are living in the midst here in America of the greatest sustained prosperity of any people at any time in the history of the world. And we're experiencing, and you've lived it every day of your life. Like, we've been living in this place that is so, and I'm so, don't mishear me, I'm so grateful that we have so many of us, and not all of us, but so many of us have just way more than enough. And that's wonderful. That's the favor of the Lord. I'm grateful. God has blessed America. But we wake up every day swimming in consumerism and materialism that hits at a level that I don't think we can even begin to comprehend, because we don't have a perspective of anything other than that. It's the fish that doesn't know what water is. I mean, we are in it. And it impacts us in ways that we may not even be aware of. And what can happen, greed and certain expectations, it can get hold of us and we just don't even know. When our appetite for stuff just goes well beyond our need for stuff, then greed starts to get in our hearts. And so many of us have more than enough, but so few of us are satisfied with that or content with that. But then we're just following the narrative we see all around us. Greed is a crafty son of a gun, man. Like, you just don't realize it's there. But it can very easily become one more thing that's just controlling us. It can also be one more way in which fasting, this might be surprising, can absolutely be our rescue. That might sound like hyperbole. It's not. I think this is very interesting. Let's see if you find it interesting too. I think it's fascinating. In the early church, fasting went hand in hand with being generous to the poor. So St. Augustine explained, he said prayer, and you can picture this, prayer is like a bird. So picture a bird. So prayer is the bird, and the two wings of that bird are fasting, and he said almsgiving, which is just being generous to people who are in need. His generosity to the poor. So it's interesting. Those are the two wings for the bird that is prayer. In our context, it would seem crazy. And just the way we talk about fasting, we can't even imagine someone who would fast but not pray. It's like, well, what's the point? Okay, like obviously, it's fasting and prayer. They're inextricably linked. Fasting and prayer. What's interesting, in the early church, in the exact same way, they couldn't imagine fasting without feeding the hungry. They're just inextricably linked. And often, and this was pretty normative, is as we said last week, they would fast 2 days a week, and what they would do is they would just take the food, this is before refrigeration, right? Well, this was the food that I was going to eat on these 2 days. Now I'm not going to eat this food on these 2 days. I'm going to give this food to people who are hungry for those days. And it was just part and parcel to what it meant to try to connect with the Lord through fasting. It was generosity. It's interesting. Choosing hunger gives us some measure of compassion for all of the people in this world who are hungry, but not it's not by choice. It's by poverty. To be clear, fasting is not starvation. Don't get it twisted. It's a profoundly different psychological experience if you're fasting, but you know at any point you could just go get some food. But when you're starving and there's no access to food, like these are very different realities. So we should acknowledge that. But fasting does remind us of those who are starving. The most extensive teaching in the entire scriptures on fasting is in Isaiah chapter 58. And it's interesting. It's the Lord coming down. We're gonna read it several verses here, but it's the Lord coming down pretty hard on his people. He's frustrated because they were fasting in order to impress him, which, let me reiterate, is not the point at all. And while they were fasting in order to impress him, they were actually oppressing others instead of serving others. And he had wanted nothing to do with that. So let me read you, again, a number of verses here. Isaiah 58, starting with verse 3. "We have fasted for you, they say. Why aren't you impressed? We've been very hard on ourselves, and you didn't even notice it. I'll tell you why," I respond. "It's because you're fasting to please yourselves. Even while you fast, you keep oppressing your workers. What good is fasting when you keep on fighting and quarreling? This kind of fasting will never get you anywhere with me. You humble yourselves by going through the motions of penance, bowing your heads like reeds bending in the wind. You dress in burlap and cover yourselves with ashes. Is this what you call fasting? Do you really think this will please the Lord? No, this is the kind of fasting I want. Free those who are wrongly imprisoned. Lighten the burden of those who work for you. Let the oppressed go free and remove the chains that bind people. Share your food with the hungry. Give shelter to the homeless. Give clothes to those who need them. And do not hide from relatives who need your help." It's a little on the nose, isn't it? I told you might catch some strays along the way that you pre-agreed. But listen to these promises when we respond with that kind of a fast. He said, then your salvation will come like the dawn, and your wounds will quickly heal. Your godliness will lead you forward. The warning from Paul is that people are being led by their appetites. Their God is their appetite. That's what's leading them. He goes, now here your godliness will lead you forward. And the glory of the Lord will protect you from behind. Then when you call, the Lord will answer, yes, I'm here. He will quickly reply. Very clear. Scripture's so clear, folks. Fasting should be paired with justice, with generosity, with care for the poor, with food for the hungry. Generosity is always the antidote to materialism. It just is. Like when you want to, you know, buy something that you don't need, and instead you go, you know what, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to give to those who are in need. If you've ever done that, and I mean, this is such a generous bunch, so I'm sure so many, if not all of you, have had that experience. You very quickly realize, oh yeah, that was way better. That was way more satisfying than to buy some trinket or gadget or fad that later on I'll feel dumb for buying. Instead of doing that, I gave to people with genuine need, and you realize, oh, that's better. But here's the thing. We know that, of course. But take self-control to do that. It takes self-denial to do that, and that's hard to do. You need to have big, strong self-control muscles to do that, and fasting is a way you can build those self-control muscles. Y'all still with me? A little discouraging, but I'm going to keep going. So we talked about that triad of pride, lust, and greed. Those are all forms of selfishness, really, like this sort of me-first mentality. What about me? What about me? And the opposite of those selfish impulses, the way we push against that, is to be generous, is to put others first. As you practice fasting, it's incredible. Again, I don't really understand all the mechanics of it, but it's so powerful. A clarity comes, a perspective. your eyes begin to look beyond the sort of scarcity and fear that might rule your days, and you begin to look more and more to others outside yourself. Remember, if prayer is a bird, fasting and generosity are the wings of that bird. So my simple encouragement is to fast, to pray, to give. And to be clear, I'm not suggesting that you should give more to the church. Maybe you should, maybe you shouldn't. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm suggesting that you give to people or respond to urgent needs. So we have some ways we do that through the life of our church. The most common that you've heard the most about is called the box, which is our need meeting system, when people, mostly in our community, like in our church community, but then also out into our local community, when people have urgent needs, you guys give lots of money to what we call the box, and we use that to respond to those needs. It just goes right through. So it's something we do, but I don't know, maybe you're new here, maybe you're not sure there's a trust there for that, or maybe you want to do something different. That would be totally fine. I just want to tell you about a couple of our ministry partners. We partner with a bunch of different ministries in the community, and then every month we highlight one of them, and last month, September, we highlighted Good Neighbors, and Good Neighbors, they are so strategic and well-organized to respond to urgent needs for particularly families. They keep people warm in the winter. They feed hungry people. They respond to urgent needs. They're better at it, frankly, than we are. And so a lot of times we will refer people to Good Neighbors. And then every month, our church, gives a chunk of money to Good Neighbors to support them. And it's just a great organization. If you're thinking, I want to give to respond to something, like, I would encourage, like, that's a great place to go. That's our September partner. Our October partner, which is now, is actually the LCAC, which is the Louisville Christian Assistance Center. They are just an incredible organization. Just a little operation there in Louisville. And they do a number of other things, but at the very heart of what they do is they find the hungry in Blount County and they feed them. And they've been a wonderful partner to us over the years. We asked them recently, we said, hey, October, we're going to be emphasizing LCAC to our church. Is there any needs you want us to know about? And they said peanut butter. You may have noticed, like, why has there been a peanut butter out here? That is to remind you and nudge you, like, hey, it'd be really great if you brought peanut butter. It's kind of expensive. It's nutrient dense. A lot of people need it. Like, we can help a lot of people with peanut butter. So there's that. And who doesn't love, actually, a lot of people don't. I love it. So there's that. Bring some peanut butter. But then, and I really appreciate how transparent they were. They said, honestly, we need money. Because here's the reality. When the cost of food goes up, which has happened, okay, when the cost of food goes up, the need for people in our community to have food goes up, and our capacity to provide that food goes down. And so we just need more money to buy more food to help more people. And they're a trustworthy organization. Maybe as you pray, as you fast, if the Lord leads you into that, maybe be especially generous and write a big old check to Louisville Christian Assistance Center, maybe. Or whatever, right? Maybe instead of an organization or a church, maybe it's somebody you just know, somebody you know that you're like, they're struggling and you're aware of that struggle. And maybe you're in a position where you can help. This would be, through fasting, an incredible way to lean into what God's doing. We talk about with the box, we refuse to look away. It's so easy to look away when we see people who are struggling. But as we walk with Jesus, we'll focus in and we'll look to give more and more. So just want, no pressure, no burden, but I just want to encourage you guys to respond as you're fasting and praying to the needs around you. All right, that's probably enough for me. So the band can come on up. They're going to continue leading us in worship. I'm going to say more stuff, though, of course. So we've talked about pride and lust and greed, and the need for generosity, and prayer, and fasting. If you think about it, that's like a greatest hits of subjects that often lead people to feel shame and regret, and like we're not doing it right, and we're not doing enough, or whatever. It's probably a pretty triggering list for some folks. So I just want to just take a second to acknowledge that. Like, okay, let's speak to that, because there's a lot in the air now. Now, I want to assure you, for what it's worth, I'm not trying to create guilt or to coerce you in any way. I'm really not. Instead, let's just be honest and acknowledge that pride and lust and greed are universal impulses, and they're also really powerful, and no one in this room is unaffected by those drives. as I've tried to be honest, I have to be really intentional to fight off all three of those. And frankly, I've got a pretty spotty track record. So just acknowledge, like maybe you're feeling regret or guilt about those things already. and then here I come along talking about fasting, which is a really difficult spiritual practice. And now I'm kind of hitting you over the head with the need to do that too. And it might feel like piling on. So look, just name it. I get that. I do. It makes sense. I sometimes feel guilt about all of these things, including fasting. But let's not lose the plot. The Bible says that Satan is the accuser of the brethren. He operates with a currency of accusation and shame, and that runs directly contrary to the way of Jesus. That's the wrong motivation, okay? To respond to shame or accusation. So I just want to encourage you, don't let our enemy scream lies over what this actually is, which is kindness that the Lord is offering to us. You might not think of fasting as a kindness being offered. It is, though. This is not about the shoulds and oughts of fasting. This is about fasting as mercy. The invitation to fast, and I believe this, down to my toes, I believe this. The invitation to fast is a mercy. This curiously powerful tool to help you be rescued from impulses that want to control you. And if they can control you, as Paul said, then they're enslaving you. This is not about guilt. This is about freedom. So maybe it's just as clear as possible. I'll say it again. Fasting is not an obligation. You are never required ever. And as we acknowledged last week, for your individual circumstances, it might not even be wise. There might be health reasons for which, like, that's not a good idea. Maybe you've got a history of disordered eating, etc. It might not even be a good idea. So again, not required. But to just put it, just bottom line it for you, the best I can tell, fasting is like this turbo button for spiritual growth and freedom. And so I just want to encourage you, if you need it, it's there. If an honest evaluation of your life with Jesus would say, actually, there are desires and impulses that I'm struggling to keep tame. There's some that are threatening, that are a little bit maybe even out of, that have started to spill the banks of what God intended. If that's where you're at, and I'm sure a lot are, I just want to encourage you, there's this gift. And if you need it, it's there. And it is a gift. Okay. Let me invite you to stand as you are able. We take a moment to pray. Just make this personal. Allow the Lord to speak. Then we'll sing just a little bit. And we'll come up and close the service. But first, let's just invite the Lord to speak to us. King Jesus, we're grateful, Lord, for whatever it is you have for us. And as we bounced around the different topics, and I may have poked different wounds, what we acknowledge is that our desires are good so long as they are controlled and used as you intend. And if we need to see that some of those desires, maybe it's pride or lust or greed or maybe something we didn't talk about at all, but if there is a desire that spilled the banks and has started to do damage, as inevitably it will, Lord, it's kindness for you to show us that that's sin. It's your kindness to show us that you have a better way. It's kindness that you give us a tool in fasting to grow in our strength to respond to these things. So, Lord, whatever it is you want to say to us in this moment, we pre-agree. And give us ears to hear what you have for us. And if you're inviting us into this, help us to say yes and obey. We push back legalism or shame. Just look to you for gift. ears to hear what you're saying to us.